Hello, Rose. How are you?
Hi, I'm very good.
It has been very long. I didn't see you. And
Yes, and it feels so much at home.
yeah, I know. So today we have Rose Hindi, executive coach at Stanton Chase. So I would leave the mic to you to introduce yourself and tell us more about your career and how did you reach this today?
Thank you, Christine, and thank you for having me today. I'm going to be super concise and relevant for
Okay.
this podcast. So I'm going to say that I'm a partner at Stanton Chase and an executive coach, and I lead on the executive coaching, career transition, and executive assessment.
Okay, very nice. So, can you give us a brief about where did you start? How did you start before Stanton Chase, before being executive coach?
All right, so I come from a media background.
Okay.
You know that very well when we were colleagues. But I've been an executive coach for the past 13 years. It started more with coaching people in media, but then the industries became many. And it's been 3 years. I joined Stanton Chase as a partner as well. And this is where it started with the executive career transition, and it evolved with other services and products.
So what are the services?
Executive coaching,
Okay.
executive assessment, but also career consultancy and headhunting.
Okay, so they all go hand in hand, I believe. Like you cannot take one and leave the other. They all complement each other.
I mean, they do 100%, and that was the need for me to join Stanton Chase because that's so complementary and that's so adjacent to career consultancy, executive career transition.
Okay.
And I'll tell you in a bit how
Yeah.
and why.
So I want to tell our audience that today we have a different episode. Like usually our aim is to get jobs to candidates and tell them how to find them. But this episode is different and it's very special because we'll be talking about personal branding, career transition and executive coaching. And I believe this is very crucial now to anyone. And still a lot of people do not understand or know the importance of having the right personal branding, networking in the right way, and choosing the right career because it really affects everything in your daily life. So let's start with the personal branding.
Yeah,
So,
if I may add one thing.
sure.
We're not, you said it's a different perspective today.
Yeah.
So it's kind of also helping our audience look for a job, except that it's with a different angle. Yeah, so it's an
100%.
on purpose
Yes,
strategy.
100%. So, yeah, what I wanted to say that we don't have a job in specific today that
Yeah,
we're
we
going to
don't.
discuss, but we'll be discussing something very important, which is how to find a job by doing the right things. So, and
A
this
dream
is
job.
your dream job, exactly. Thank you. How to find your dream job by doing the right things. And I believe by time you'll not be doing a lot of effort. Things will be falling into place if you take the right steps.
Yeah, there will be always efforts, but you'll get used to
Yeah, it's a muscle that you train, right?
Yeah.
So let's start with the personal branding. It's becoming, I believe, the talk of the hour now, the personal branding. Some people now understands more about it and they're trying to implement some tips, and some people still are like they don't have a clue whatsoever what's happening. So I would love to hear from you everything about personal branding from scratch.
Thank you for that. And also, there are some people who misunderstand personal branding. And this is where I'd like to start. Personal branding is not a PR tool, and it's not an aesthetic thing that we add to our profile.
Okay.
It's not an embellishment. It's none of these. It's who we are. So when we talk personal branding, I invite my clients always to go one step back and personal branding is a pillar for everything, whether it's for just personal branding purposes or the first pillar of the career transition. So it's used, it's very versatile. It's very important to really understand what it is. So I invite my clients, I encourage them to go one step back before we start and put a strategy for personal branding. It's very important for them to connect with who they are, own and disown what they don't like about themselves, and also understand what image they need to convey to the world. Once you understand that, it becomes very easy. When I ask people, why do you want to work on your personal branding? And they're like, I don't know. Well, you need to know. Because once you have a clarity on that, everything starts to fall in place. So that's how it starts. That's the step number one.
So they need to know and believe in it, or just know and implement it?
They need to embody it.
Okay.
So they need to own it. So here's what happens, Christine. You have people having beautiful portfolio. You have people having their LinkedIn managed by an agency. You have people having that.
Really?
There are people.
Okay.
But what happens is that when you have a conversation with these people, there's a disconnect from what you see and from who they are. They might be, by the way, a better version than what you're seeing on any platform, but they're not the same. So personal branding is actually taking your best version to the world, to the conversation, to the industry where you work, to the workplace. That's personal branding.
Okay. So when it comes to personal branding, is it different from your CV to your LinkedIn profile, or how do you implement it?
It's part of it. So oftentimes I have clients who come to me and they're like, okay, we need now to start working on my personal branding, irrespective of what the reason is why we're working on personal branding. And they're like, okay, would you help me or have someone from the team help me with my CV? And my answer is no.
Okay.
But here's what we do. We'll show you how to do it. And then they're like, okay, can someone help me with my LinkedIn? I mean, profile and also post. And my answer is no. But we'll put a strategy together and we do it. It's very important to have them, but it's also very important to put a strategy together with the client so that they do it and you hold them accountable of it and you hold the space for it. But they have to do it.
Because you'll not be always there for them and they have to understand how it's being done so they can continue. And it's not one-time thing that you just do it today and you stop it tomorrow. So they know they need to know how to continue.
Yeah, my job, my mission is to prep them for this, is to put them on the right track. And once they're derailed, I'll bring them back to it, but they'll have to do it by themselves.
Okay. So we were just discussing for the personal branding, how to incorporate it in your CV and LinkedIn. And when someone comes and tell you, please do it for me, you say, no, I will show you the way. So can you share with us what one of the strategies for LinkedIn?
That's the most asked question, by the way. And people think it's easier than what it actually is. It does require a commitment to do it. But I told you, it starts with you really knowing who you are and who you want to convey to the world. So it starts there. Once we know why we're doing the personal branding, it becomes easier. But here's what we do. We put a strategy. So who are you? Who are you talking with? Who are you addressing? And it's very important that you have a niche. If you're addressing everyone, then the personal branding is going astray. So it's very important to have even a small niche, if that's a thing, at the beginning, and then you could expand a bit your audience. So who you are, who's your audience, who's your niche, and consistency. People think that if they post one day and then they get busy for 2-3 weeks, then that's okay. It actually is not. You need to be consistent so that you engage your audience.
So what do you mean regularly? By consistency?
So here's what I do. When I say Monday, 8:30 a.m., your post need to be published on LinkedIn, we'll have to make sure that 8:30 Monday, you're held accountable of that and you have your post published. And here's what I do. I publish mine and I share and I'm like, here's mine. Where's yours? This is
you hold them accountable. And
yes, I do that as well. And there's one thing that's very, very important as well, being authentic. And I understand everyone is like lured with the artificial intelligence and with ChatGPT and all that. Well, I'm not a fan of that, but if they insist on using that, they really have to feed ChatGPT with the right data so that this person is not an avatar, but it's still you. Again, I'm so much into, I mean, I write my own content and I encourage everyone to do it because you would need to stay authentic so that when we have a conversation, like just we're having it now, I'm still the same person.
Yes.
When you read my post and you talk to me, I'm definitely the same person.
And people are very smart now. They can tell what is ChatGPT and when the content is from ChatGPT or any AI tool. Versus a human is really who wrote it, because it's more authentic and it's more simple. So and you need to use also your mind in storytelling. It's all about storytelling,
exactly.
Right?
This is what I was gonna say. Storytelling. Now, how would ChatGPT help you with your own story?
Exactly.
If you're sharing insights, and that's when it becomes so personal. Again, I'm not against artificial intelligence, and if someone decides to use it, you have to be super careful on how using it. I don't personally, again, but I mean, yeah, the more, let's put it this way, the more authentic, the better.
Okay, so I realized something when you said 8:30 Monday. So I started also posting a lot on LinkedIn. And It's taking a lot of effort for me as well, because I want to be authentic. I write what I really feel. I don't go to ChatGPT, so I feel like I'm just putting all my emotions and ideas there. So I tried three different timings, and it's very interesting. So the first one, I did it on a 9 a.m., so I scheduled the post to be published at 9 a.m., and it made a lot of good feedback. Like, there were a lot of impressions.
Engagement.
Yeah, a lot of engagement. And then there is another one at night. Like, I would say 20% engagement. And then the other one was at 1 p.m. So I thought this was the break time. People also be on their LinkedIn checking it. And I would say the engagement is 50%. So early morning, I believe, with LinkedIn, it's the best timing for posting. This is my personal realization.
Yeah, I mean, even I believe that from what I see. Here's the thing. LinkedIn will never share the secrets of their algorithm.
Yeah.
So we'll have to try.
Yeah, it's trial and error. So I'm trying to share that this is my experience so far, like early morning. And then I felt that you were confirming the same, that early morning is the best.
Yeah, I mean,
thing.
Weekdays, early morning is the best. And what we know for sure is that it's a rewarding platform. So the more you engage, the more you post, the more LinkedIn will help you be visible. That's why when I say please be consistent, it's because you want this platform to appreciate you and to kind of like make you more visible. And one tip, if I may, always associate your post with a visual, whether it's your photo, or if you don't have, as a worst case scenario, it could be something from the net. But when you have when you pair it with a visual, this is when your post theoretically does better. But again, there are things that we don't know.
Yeah. So when you said you need to have your content and speak to your niche and be consistent. So this content has to be relevant to my career or my experience or just something that I went through and I wanted to share with my network. What should be the content of this posting every week?
So when we say choose your niche, we also say choose your topic and stick to it.
Okay.
Not one big topic.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath you have like subtopics, but they have to be adjacent in a way. The last thing you would want to do is to confuse that niche. So if one day I talk about fashion and then the other day I talk about media and then the third day I talk about career transition, I'm definitely confusing my audience. And I've been there, by the way, because, I mean, I used to be in media and in executive coaching, and I've heard that, well, we're confused. What do you do exactly? Most of us were very much like multifaceted. We have different things that we do.
True.
You will have to choose. You can't be everything on LinkedIn. And even if you're going to a networking event, choose what you want to be at least on that day or on that event. That's what we tend to forget. So I was giving you the example of what I do personally. So if I'm talking mainly about executive transition, mm-hmm. executive career transition, underneath there might be many subtopics. So it could be one day I'm talking about personal branding. The other day I'm talking about the elevator speech. The third day I'm sharing a story of success of one of my clients mm-hmm. without naming them, of course. All of them, there's still one topic. You're not confused, but I'm diversifying under the same big umbrella. But if one day I'm talking about me being the mother and my struggles, and then the other day I'm talking about executive coaching, then there might be some confusion. Again, the rule is if you stick to your big topic up to 80%, 85%, mm-hmm. and then 15%, because there will be events that are happening, a particular, it's Mother's Day, and you want to talk about it, then it's different. But as long as you stick to it to a 75, 80, 85%, you're good.
Okay. And the best platform for personal branding?
I mean, I'm not sponsored or paid by LinkedIn, but I have to say it's LinkedIn by far. Instagram isn't.
Okay. It's, I think, for a different niche it's for different purposes.
More for your daily life mm-hmm. and things that some people use it as well. But I mean, it comes with an authority on LinkedIn. It's really an oasis mm-hmm. of opportunities, again, if you use it correctly.
Okay, so that's what we want to discuss, how to use it correctly. So how to make sure that I'm doing the right steps in terms of personal branding so I can land my dream job.
All right, so now we're shifting a bit gears. We're talking about personal branding being an intrinsic part of executive career transition. And that's actually part of the very first thing that we do.
It could be executive career transition. It could be finding my first dream job. It could be career transition for a mid-senior level or even a junior level, like someone started in a software company and then realized, no, I want to be, digital marketing, or I want to be HR, whatever. Like,
that's still transition.
Okay, yeah, but I'm talking like in any career level, so it doesn't have to be executive.
All right. Oh, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, when we talk about, forget about executive, career transition, it means many things. It could be that you're obliged to transition because you're made redundant. There has been a restructuring. You had the run-in with your boss, whatever it is. So you're compelled and you're obliged.
Okay.
And that's my least favorite kind of transition, because this is when you're not patient enough.
Yeah, and you're desperate, yeah.
And then there's a transition by choice mm-hmm. where you're not happy, you know, it's no more for you, even if everything seems okay.
Okay.
But there's something that isn't fulfilling anymore. I mean, it was, not anymore. And there are cases when it's toxic and you stay where you are because you know it. It's kind of comfort zone. It's mm-hmm. not so comfortable though, but you know it. You know that devil, right? So you stay. Until you realize that you need to transition. All of these are still transitions.
So I just want to clarify something when we say transition. Transition in a way that I'm going to another company or another corporate, or just changing completely my career. Like I was in marketing, now I'm going into sales, or I was in HR, I'm going into sales. So what do you mean by transition here?
That's the extreme one. So if you're an HR person and you're moving to another HR job, you're still transitioning, but you're within the same industry.
Okay.
If you're having a total career shift, and which is the massive change, and this is the one that is longer than any other transition, and it's so bumpy, I have to tell you, it still happens, but it's still transition. So this is exactly what I mean. It's so diversified when we say career transition. What is important is that you wake up that day and you say, all right, I need to assess where I'm at my career, and it's time to explore the grass on the other job, because it is greener on the other job. We don't want to believe so, but it is. When you have this conscious decision that you want to explore, even if you end up saying, okay, I'm happy where I am now, but you will have to assess and explore, this is when the transition happens, starts at least.
So how many cases come to you in that second type, that everything is fine, endless, everything is okay?
Endless.
But they realize they want to do the transition, really?
Endless. I mean, they on an average day, Christine, and I'm not exaggerating, on an average day, the least I would have would be 3 to 4 conversations of people who know they're in the wrong place. It's not for them, but it's how would they get the courage to get out of this comfort zone? Some of them, we have this conversation, they know that it's a good thing to do. They still don't do it. They go like 3, 6 months, come back. Some don't. I'm still waiting for them to come back. But it's like, and everyone, if you, sometimes we're sitting for different purposes. I scratch the surface because I can't.
Yeah.
That's in my DNA.
I know.
And then this emerges. I would confidently say 9 out of 10 people are not very happy where they are. And I would strongly encourage them at least to explore and assess.
And it's very easy for you not to spot them.
I mean, yes. Yes, that's what I do for a living.
Yeah. I understand.
But that's my mission also, Christine. It's not that, you know, it's...
That's your life purpose?
Yes, that's very much my life purpose. And so, I found it.
Yeah, and it's I think, very satisfying to be living your life purpose every day and making sure you're helping people achieve what they want to do.
Yeah, when they say dream job, no, it's not possible. I'm a living example of that.
You are.
Christine, there's nothing that I would implement in the program that did not apply to me or to my clients or both.
Okay.
It's not something that's theoretical.
Can you share one success story of someone, a client or someone who came and said that, I know this is not the place for me, but it's very comfortable, and they disappeared for 3 months, came back and decided to do the transition, and how it changed their life?
That's most of the clients.
Okay, share two then, not one.
Okay, I'll share one with this case, and I'll share one who, I mean, they had a restructuring, and then she was compelled, kind of, because she didn't want to change geography.
Okay.
So she was compelled to leave. And the other one was by choice.
Okay.
So I'll start with the first one. And you know what, when we have these conversations, the first discovery session, I kind of beg them, don't resign. Please don't. Because I don't want this urgency of you when you're on. First, I want you to still be on a payroll, to be honest, so that you have the financial cushion. And second, because I don't want you to wake up and like feel so lost and regret your decision. And it's not bad, by the way, if you're still on your job and still exploring another role. That's what I try to instill. I try to make them realize that you're not a bad employee if you do so. So this person came to me, and he's actually, he doesn't live even in Dubai, so he's in Europe. We had a virtual call, and he ended up coming to Dubai, but the first call was virtual. And he knew it's no more for him. He's very senior.
Okay.
And it's a position that everyone theoretically would want. He wasn't happy because he reached a plateau and it was saturated. And for him, he sees no growth. He's been there for 15 years. So it's very much comfortable. He vanished. He came back after some time saying, oh, I have some news. I resign. I'm like, we agreed that you won't. Huh. But anyway, it was a good thing that he resigned, and he was so much dedicated. And right now, he's actually having, it was his choice to have like a short-term project because he's still exploring what he wants, but he did that through the program. So that's the first story. He's very happy, very fulfilled. I mean, he's a case study in terms of his dedication and the record time that he did landing a project-based role. The second one is like this lady is just phenomenal, and in terms of personality, she's so special. She's also so bold and so strong, and she wouldn't settle. You know,
okay.
So the aim of the program is that you won't settle and that you would land a dream job or the closest to it. She made sure that in a record time, which we usually say 6 to 7 months until you land, not the program though, but until you land, because you will know what to do after 2 or 3 months and you will go by yourself doing what you need to be doing, still there for you, but again, out of the program. She landed in a record time, like in 4 months, and it was summertime. And you know what? Summertime everywhere.
Yeah, it's dead. Yeah.
She still did that because she really, you know, when we say you need to stick your arse where your heart is, she did that. She was hopping planes, going for job interviews, not doing them even virtually.
Yeah.
And not only she transitioned to something that's very close to her dream job, but also she got promoted. She was a very senior director and now she's a CEO.
Wow. And she is a CEO. I love that.
She is.
Okay. So when you say the program is 2 months, what's the program like? It's coaching and psychometric assessments.
There is a psychometric. So it's a one-on-one and it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah,
so
course.
I'll tell you a bit of like, I'll take you through a tour of the program. So it's very much personalized with every candidate because no one has the same goal as another job seeker.
Experience and everything. Yeah,
yeah. And we have clients in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Qatar, KSA, Argentina, Spain, France, India, Canada. So you name it. It's so much diversified and there are so many synergies over there.
Yeah.
I know you like the word synergy.
Yeah.
So
just
what, what happens is that we sit with this person and we put a strategy. And then it's a one-on-one, ideally 8 to 10 sessions is the ideal number of sessions. We start weekly and then in terms of format, it starts becoming 2 to 3 weeks so that they finish what they need to be doing.
They have homeworks to do.
They do have bloody homework to do. And so let's say 2 or 3 months, they're done with the program. So they know what to do. It's like you when you go to the gym. Now you know how to do your sit-ups.
You have a personal trainer.
Your bicep curls and everything. You know how to do that. You don't need your coach anymore. But I'm still there for them for feedback. And I want to make sure that they land. It will take them approximately 6 to 7 months until they land. A dream job again without settling, because if they wanted to settle, they could land within 2 or 3 months.
Tell me about cases they didn't land.
I'll give you numbers. I confidently say 8 to 9 people out of 10 would land.
That's impressive.
Within 6 to 7 months.
Yeah.
Now, what happened to these 1 to 2 out of 10 who don't land? They either still didn't land, they're taking a bit longer, and that's okay. Or, unfortunately, they're not doing what they need to be doing.
Okay.
So we talked about success stories, and there are stories that are not so successful, but they're minimal. They're not so successful yet, to be precise, because it will happen,
but it's
longer. I mean, yes, and here's the thing. I text them, I call them, and I'm like, okay, you still want to land a dream job? And they're like, yes, of course I want to. And I'm like, I don't think so. You're not showing up. You're not doing what you need to be doing. And look, the money isn't even in my bank account. I have spent that already. But it's your money and it's your investment. It's your time that's more important than the money. And it's your dream. And you're not happy where you are. Why are you putting 100% of your time? I'm not trying to be the bad girl here or the bad coach, but if you don't dedicate it, they tell me it's a full-time job and we're already working and it's hard. No, it's not a full-time job. It's not a requirement. It's a part-time job, though. So if you can dedicate 1 to 1.5 hour a day, I know it's a lot, but you still want to transition, then you will land.
And I love how you're holding them true to themselves.
Oh my God, yeah.
You just didn't spend the money and disappeared.
I mean, you will have to hold them accountable. You're a coach as well, so you would understand that.
Yeah. So how can you measure the success of your personal branding?
With the level of engagement. Again, okay. It depends on the goal. And it doesn't have to be if you're having 300 likes and 34 comments, which means you have succeeded. You will have to look at who liked your post, right? Yeah. If we're talking about a LinkedIn post.
Yeah.
I mean, and who engaged and who reached out to you via DM and what did that bring to you? Did it bring you closer to your goal, irrespective of what your goal is? Do you want to have, if you're a coach, you want to have more clients?
Yeah.
Or do you want to just inspire them? Or it depends. Or you're looking for a job, let's say, if it's not me, if it's someone else. If this is bringing you closer to your goal, then you're on track. If not, then you will have to optimize your strategy again.
Okay. And every post, should it have a call to action at the end? Or just you can be posting content for the sake of being consistent and sharing with your niche?
That's a very powerful question. If you can, then of course it's good. But it doesn't have to be in every post. If you're sharing a story, maybe you could encourage them to share their own. If you're giving them a tip, maybe you would want to challenge them to implement this tip. But it's not a requirement. It's a very good thing to have, though.
Okay. So I'm just now thinking on when we are saying posting content, and I would love to say that it's story, like we should be posting a story every now and then, whatever the aim of the story. But it's story, it has a beginning, it has
five elements at least.
Yeah.
Five elements of the story. They have to be there, you know.
So share this with us. You're keeping secrets.
No, I'm not. I actually, you know, Christine, if you look at my engagement and how I do it, it's like sometimes people tell me you're oversharing. What if your content is stolen? Or what if, like, they don't need to come to you and do the transition or the personal branding because you're oversharing? And I don't think this is how it goes. It's actually, again, that's a life purpose for me. And I'm confident that when you gain their trust, they will come to you. And True. If they don't and it helps them, then I'm totally good with that. So you were asking me about the story.
Yeah.
So when we say a story, sometimes, you know, there's a compelling story, and there's a story that when you read it or when you hear it, that isn't so interesting to you. It's because sometimes we miss an element in it. So if you don't put the context, if you don't put the character, if you don't put the plot twist, if you don't put the, you know, all the elements of the story, if they're not there, then something is missing in your story. And if there's no point of view, the moral of the story, then there's no point of the story. This is why some stories, read them and then you're like, okay, so what? But it's always a very good perspective to share your story because it's a shortcut to a message to land.
So now, executive coaching is becoming more and more, I wouldn't say popular, but people would understand more the importance of executive coaching. So from your point of view, if you can tell us more about it, what's the benefits and the value of having an executive coach?
You know, Christine, 13 years back when I started as an executive coach, I mean, I sounded like an alien. No one even knew what is executive coaching or what is coaching in general, life coaching, any sort of coaching. You know, we call it co-active coaching, the kind of coaching that we did. No one knew what it is. So when you don't know what it is, you don't know what's the value of it. But then there was really a long journey of education because there was a lot of coaches, so many coaches, and it became more of it was normalized in a way. And when people started normalizing having a coach and they saw the impact on their life, then they started to want to have a coach more and more. But again, it's for people with a growth mindset.
Yeah.
And there's a misunderstanding. The coach will not tell you what to do. Again, I mean, let me say that so that it sinks in. The coach will not tell you what to do. A consultant would, a mentor yes. would, but not a coach. The coach is your blind spot. So it will help, the coach will help you see things that you don't see. And it, the coach will help you tap into your best version so that you do what you need to be doing. That's in a nutshell what a coach is.
Yeah, that's from the perspective of a coach. And I believe also it's the co-active model, right? It's the coach is taking your hand and supporting you with your journey and making you see things differently.
Yeah, but, you know, a real coach, even if they're not a co-active, this is what they're meant to be doing. And unfortunately, with all my due respect to all the coaches out there, the figure of the coach was a bit distorted many times because there are people who have changed the definition of a coach. They can be whatever they want to be, mm-hmm. but a coach would still not have the authority to tell you what you need to be doing. They would champion you. They would help you be your best version and your best self so that you do what you need to be doing.
So yeah, also clients would need to have this mindset that a coach is here to support me and help me reach my goals. They will not tell me what to do. They will not have the answers for me. And they will not do the work for me. Like, they have to be accountable, yes. And they have to do it themselves. And there is sometimes a lot of hard work to be done. And they need to do it themselves.
All the time.
Yes.
I mean, when we were talking about career transition, that's coaching. That's one of the forms of coaching. Because when we talk about coaching, it's so big of an umbrella.
Yeah.
But underneath that, there are more like niche types of coaches, coaching.
Like what?
One of them is career transition.
Okay.
Yeah.
What else?
It depends what your goal is. Sometimes it's just leadership coaching. Sometimes it's like we call it career coaching or professional coaching. Mm-hmm. So it depends on your target.
Okay. So how receptive executives are now in terms of coaching? Like, there are a lot of companies now understanding the value of coaching and having coaches available for their executives. But how do you find executives receptive to the idea?
I would say mostly they are.
Mm-hmm.
Again, executives who have a growth mindset. Because okay. other than that, it wouldn't work. But honestly, I would say in terms of numbers, 9 out of 10 would be very much open to that.
Okay. And they find that companies hire coaches for executives that they have an ongoing issue, or they just believe in the idea of coaching and they want them to have this as part of their growth?
Now, again, that's a very powerful question. So this is what happens. So we get contacted by a particular organization, okay. and we have two scenarios at least.
Mm-hmm.
There might be more, but at least two very common scenarios. It's one, they have never assessed their executives and it's time to explore so that they perform wow. better.
Okay.
So they know that they really need to increase their ROI, their, you know, their return on investment and all that. So they would need to invest in their people. And it's not only by offering them courses and training. You would need to know what they need, what competences you need to be working on. So we assess them.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we put a development plan for every executive, for every leader, which is different from the one that their colleagues would have.
Of course.
And of course, what would help is when you had the brief, why did they think that they need this coaching? And this is when we have the part two. So they come to you with a particular, I don't want to call it issue, but I mean area to work on, a competence. They would tell you this person is, just for the sake of the example, is very much micromanaging. Mm-hmm. They need to be part of the succession planning, and this is holding them back. And we need to work with them mm-hmm. closely so that they evolve. So they know what it is, and this makes it a bit easier for us because, you know, they've done probably 360, and they They know what the problem is, mm-hmm. if I may call it problem. And this is when we chip in and we do the executive coaching.
So usually they are inviting you because of there is a very obvious issue that it needs to be worked on.
Or they've never, as I told you, they've never assessed their leaders and they want to explore how they could have a better performance. They know that the performance is lukewarm mm-hmm. and like, okay, we're probably achieving the numbers.
Yeah.
The first quarter is okay. The second quarter, not so well. What can we do so that we break through?
Okay, so which is still interesting because if you look at 10 years back or more, that this wasn't even there on the table, that companies would hire executive coaching to their executives and to increase their numbers or their performance or even their behaviors. My question is, do you think when companies will just be hiring coaches for the sake only of their executives? No, there's nothing to be worked on, there's nothing to be enhanced. They just believe in the coaching and they want it for their executives.
I would say they would still need an added value because it's, after all, it's a sort of an investment, not just a commercial investment, but also an investment of time. And, you know, you have a coach coming to the workplace or they're meeting somewhere and it's like every session is like 75, 90 minutes. Okay. So there is a commitment to that. And the other thing, if you're doing an executive coaching and you don't have a target, you don't have a competence, at least one, mm-hmm. that you're working toward, then the executive coaching might turn into a nice conversation. And we don't want that to happen. We really want a development plan.
Yeah, but I believe from the discovery session, you will get at least 2 to 3 competence or a primary focus that things this executive himself wants to or herself focus on.
So part of the assessment is having this conversation, the one-on-one interview.
Yeah.
And this is valid, but there's more to that. We would need to have a psychometric assessment. Ideally, I would need to have the 360. So sometimes the one-on-one alone wouldn't suffice, you know? So you would need supporting evidence for that.
Okay. So what are the misconceptions around executives looking for a new job? Would they speak to recruiters or they go job hunting or just wait for the magic thing to happen?
Yeah, they would wait for a job sometimes to come sit on their lap, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is how we're wired to think.
Yeah.
This is how we think that we look for a job. So when someone, that's very typical, we're on a discovery call and someone is like, it's been 6 to 7 months. I'm looking for a job. And so these are very cliche. Yeah. And nothing is happening. And headhunters are no more calling me anymore. And I used to be identified, not anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm having self-doubts. All this, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, am I really hearing the same thing all over again? Or am I imagining? Because it's so much the same thing. It's a very common syndrome.
Mm.
And my very first reaction is, okay, so you've been looking for a job. Would you tell me how have you been looking for a job? And that's the misconception. They're like, I applied on LinkedIn, easy apply. I'm like, okay, we'll talk about that in a bit. And then I've reached out to many headhunters and nothing is coming to fruition. And three, I'm networking because I believe that this is what I need to be doing and still not happening. I'm like, okay, can we go one by one? The first one, at least for the executive level, easy apply and apply, whether on LinkedIn or any other reliable platform, I mean, has really very low chances. I'm yet to come across an executive who have landed the next role via applying on a platform. I haven't found this person. It's been really endless time doing that. The second thing, when they tell me we reach out to headhunters, well, you have to do that. That's one thing that you need to tick when you put a strategy to look for a job. This is something that has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, also like, only 30 to 40% of all the jobs are with headhunters. Now, what happened to the 60 and 70%?
Mm.
They are still there, but they're not with them. And the third point, what was it?
Networking.
Yeah, networking. So I've been networking. So networking, by all means, is a good thing. But it depends, again, on your goal. So if you are looking for your next role, let's say as a commercial director, and you're going to a networking event that is for media and marketing, mm-hmm. you know, how is that relevant? And if you go to an event where you don't have the decision makers, or if you're grabbing coffees with people that you think would bring you closer to where you want to be, but they're not the right person, how is networking adding to your job search? That's the thing. But again, it's because they don't know, and that's what we do. We help them know.
Yeah, and they believe they are doing the right thing, and just they're not being lucky.
Here comes the frustration, yeah. because you think you're looking for a job, and why am I not being called? People are getting called less and less. One, because they're becoming more senior, and second, because the dynamics of looking for a job have changed.
Okay, so now we understand that it's not the easy apply that will get you a job, being an executive level.
For an executive,
yeah.
I mean, I would say and definitely not.
Reaching only to headhunters will not do the
it trick. It might, low chances. Yeah.
Networking, it has to be done the right way. So what are the tips that people should do to find a job?
Okay, if I want to give a magic formula, there's no magic
no,
formula.
No, but there are tested steps that you know, yes. and you tell your clients to do it, and when they follow, they land their job in the 6 to 7 months.
We,
right?
we know what works, we know what yes. doesn't work, and we keep on updating that, because with every story, there are learnings. With every actually session,
yeah.
there are learnings. So we're very much backed up with data. So it's not that we think it works. We know that it works.
Okay.
So when they tell me, oh, but this will not work. Well, it does. We have evidence.
I want to know what is working.
Okay. So you want, I'll tell you the formula that I believe in, and I'll give you the tips that you want. I know you want the tips.
Yes.
So the formula to land a job mm-hmm. is simple, but not easy, because what is common sense isn't common practice, right?
Okay. Yes.
So it's you really owning your personal branding plus networking with the right decision makers is what is going to get you into a meaningful conversation. Because the aim is a meaningful conversation. The job offer will come if you have a meaningful conversation. And I have cases of people having job offers, but it's not what they want, because we do the value mining yeah. work. And we know every time they call me, Rose, I have a job offer. Can we discuss that? Yes, sure. Do you think that works for me? Well, I don't know. We need to do the work.
Yeah.
And I'll open their information and I check, okay, do you have this value there? Does this align with who you are? If at least 75% is there, then go for it. If not, try again. Tips. So one is clarity. No clarity, no nothing. If you don't know what role you're looking for, then you're actually not looking for any role. So you would need to gain clarity mm-hmm. first before moving any further. Second, you really need to know what industry it is. Industry, probably adjacent industry, and also the geography. If you don't know all these, then it's not going to happen. A very third important tip is the right networking. Networking is, everyone is like, networking will get me a job. Well, of course, but the right networking, the right outreach message, the mm-hmm. right conversation, the right personal branding. It's there. It's the pillar in you looking for a job. Because this personal branding is what you're going to be putting on that table once you're grabbing this coffee.
Yeah.
It's actually knowing what to use out of your personality and out of your portfolio and what is relevant to this conversation. So if you do that, I promise you're going to be landing a job.
Wow, it's a lot of eye-opening tips. So what if I'm clear about the job I want or the career, but actually it's not relevant to me or it's not aligned with what I want? Like, this is what I think I want, so I'm putting all my efforts, all my time, and then I after 6 months, I wake up, wow, I still didn't land a job.
That's a very bumpy and long way to land a next role.
Mm-hmm.
So we do bring the awareness of the client from day one.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that is not possible, but it's the likelihood that starts to become less and less. So if you are a CEO and in an industrial company, it's easier to be a CEO and in the competitive industrial company, right? It's easier. If you want to shift career completely in terms of industry, that if that takes you the first one 6 months, the other one, I don't know how long it's going to take you. I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's a very long way to do it. And you will need to gear yourself up. So you are hired because you're adding value.
Yeah.
You're not hired because we're talking about executives.
Yeah.
You're not hired so that you can only learn and so that you could experiment.
Yeah.
So you go to a meaningful conversation when you're adding value, when you're relevant, when you will leave an impact. If they feel you're a rookie, they are not going to be calling you back. If you're a junior, yes. If you're an executive, they won't. This is why there are cases when people don't end up landing. And honestly, when you put the strategy together, I'm not a fan of doing that. So if I see it kind of impossible, we actually don't do it.
Okay. So you still believe if an executive wants to change from one job to the other, it should be adjacent industry or the same industry competitor?
There are many parameters. Industry, geography, role, so there are many parameters, salary, compensation.
Yeah, of course.
All these are important parameters. But yes, it's very dangerous to completely change an industry. But here's a tip. If you have transferable skill sets, then it becomes easier. But if there's nothing that's transferable, then how are you going to be adding value?
So in my humble opinion, the more senior you are, it becomes less important your know-how. Rather, it's your problem solving and accountability. So the more senior, it comes your leadership skills, to be honest. It's not your know-how of the industry. This is, of course, important to understand the industry, how it's going and running. But there are so many other important factors to run this company and to run the whole business. So that's why I feel this taboo of changing a job, it has to be in the same industry, it should by time change.
So again, many parameters, the role, the industry, the geography. Mm-hmm. So when I say the role, it can be transferable. So if you are a CHRO, then you can't be in retail and you can't be in F&B and you can't be in pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
It can't, because that's very much transferable. A CFO might also be transferable. True. A CEO as well, a COO. So again, if you have the transferable skill set, then yes. But if you don't, then you will. But again, even for a CFO, and you will be surprised, by the way, that there are cases where they would want the CFO to be in this industry, to belong in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
So the job description can sometimes be super stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you have a rapport with the person you're having the conversation with, it might change and sometimes it won't.
Okay.
So this is what I'm saying. It might be a longer and a bumpier road. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if there's nothing to add value, then it won't happen.
True. So before we go into the next point, I want to share that roles do executive coaching. So with Career Fit podcast, will be offering a promo code of Career Fit. And whoever wants to have executive coaching with Rose, they can use the Career Fit promo code and then they'll be getting 10% discount.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm happy to offer the 10%. I'm also happy to, if they're not too sure, why don't we just hop on a call, have a 20-minute conversation. And they could, we could both see if it takes us somewhere.
Yeah, if there is chemistry.
And that's complimentary, absolutely.
Perfect, perfect. So again, people can use that and get to know where they want to be and understand if they are ready or not.
Yeah.
So my next question is about leadership skills. And what do you see now in the market about leadership? And how is it evolving? How do people look at leaders?
You know, when we talk leaders, we talk about some sort of scorecards. And it depends what kind of leader and what kind of industry and what kind of role you have.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, we really need to tick boxes in terms of traits, and
yeah.
in terms of parameters, and in terms of attributes. So when we say leader, it's not just because they look or talk like a leader.
Yeah.
And I believe in assessments, by the way, not the only tool.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when we talk leadership and we really want to, let's say, hire someone who is very much of a fit for a particular role.
Yeah.
We really want to make sure that we have those traits that belong to the scorecard of, let's say, the COO, right? So we kind of assess,
okay.
them with a psychometric, and we see if we have the same competencies that are matching. And honestly, this is becoming more of an awareness.
Okay.
It's not something that you want to just feel in a conversation. You want to quantify it. You want to measure it.
So now that you're meeting executives and leaders every day, what are the main characteristics that they should have as leaders?
You know, that's a tough question because, again, as I told you earlier, that we have a scorecard per role, right?
Yeah.
So we have a set of
but
attributes.
There are things that they cannot, like, go
so
without.
So that if they're a leader, they mm-hmm. can't be a leader without being influential.
Okay.
They can't be a leader without being decisive. They can't be a leader without being adaptable. So these are the top of mind.
Showing
they have to
empathy.
Be there. Yes, up to a certain level, by the way. You'll be surprised.
Wow, okay.
I mean,
having ownership.
Of course. But, you know, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we would think like, oh, but this scorecard is showing me that this leader isn't too empathetic, but at the same time, you're telling me that's a good fit. How is that? Because we know from data that there's a certain level of empathy that needs to be mm-hmm. there. Because if, let's say, again, depending on the role,
mm-hmm.
if let's say he's super or she is super empathetic, then that might be a derailer. That might be keeping them from doing what they need to be
holding
doing.
Them back. Okay.
So it's all in the dosage,
mm-hmm.
if I may say, and it's all depending on the roles.
Okay. So I believe we have covered a lot of things and there are so many insightful information. So if we can summarize 3 pillars for personal branding, that should be there. It could be for the CV and 3 pillars for the LinkedIn profile.
Oh, for personal branding?
Yes, 3 actionable tips.
Oh, okay. Let me see. When it comes to CV, I'm not a fan of very long CVs. The vocab.
Okay.
Remember when we started and we were talking about the word
lead or not?
Yes. So when we're working on a CV mm-hmm. again, when they are working and I'm just checking it, you know, there are words that might be ruffling the feather of whoever is looking at the CV.
Okay.
So words that are like leading and you know when
managing, supervising.
Managing is okay, but what I mean is like you can show confidence, but you don't have to show like you're a Wonder Woman or a Superman.
Okay.
So just be who you are without overstating it. So mind the vocab, mind the achievements. When we say achievements,
mm-hmm.
they really have to be quantifiable. So sometimes I'm like, that's not a CV, that's a job description, right?
Yeah.
So I would want probably some numbers, probably
yes.
something that you have achieved.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be too long, you know. So, and for the very old jobs, like we can be very concise with them and focus on the new ones. And not very colorful and not, you know, all that.
Mm, yeah. So I tell also people when like they come and show me their CV and what do you think? Like anything beyond or before 5 years, you don't really need to discuss a lot about what you have been doing. So
5 years still, yes. But I mean, your first job as an intern, No.
Yeah, so I say like the recent 5 years, yes, mentioned
even longer. Even longer, but you can't go, you can enumerate them without really elaborating a lot. That's the thing.
So, and of course, do not go anything beyond 2 pages. So
yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. So these are the tips for the CV.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, owning the CV. So when I want to have a conversation with you, it's not just that you want to keep it. Two things, not keeping it on the paper, and when I'm having this conversation, then I don't really see these achievements. And second, don't go with your CV like on repeat, like, you know, just use whatever is relevant to this conversation.
It's funny enough that sometimes I would ask people about things in their CV and they don't know, and then I ask them to. Who did
because
the CV?
Because someone else did the CV. And this is why, when I told you from the beginning, when someone tells me, can someone help me with my CV?
No.
We'll show you how, but you will do it so that you own it, right?
And they learn to do their stuff themselves.
And they start telling you about their CV. And the first thing that I say, okay, I've checked your portfolio. I promise I did. What isn't in your CV that you would want to share? Mm. Because everything that is in your CV, I know it.
Okay. So 3 actionable steps for personal branding.
For personal branding, you would need 1, to really know why you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And really connect to who you are so that you pass the message of who you are to people.
Okay.
And 2nd, I will say being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to do... not a random approach for personal branding, but it has to.
So once per week?
At least.
Okay.
If we're talking about posting on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But 1 is good.
Mm-hmm.
And 3rd, knowing your niche and knowing your topic.